Is there a doctor in the house?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
Not that you needed more validation, Dr. Batar, because I would play I Told You So, because you've been telling them so for a long time. But there are two more meta-analysis reviews confirming, once again, the link between mercury and the autism spectrum disorder. Nobody's surprised here, but my gosh, I mean, all the times you could be saying, I told you so, to all the dunderheaded doctors that have been telling you you're out of your mind, you were in your mind, they were out of theirs.
Well, it comes back to the characteristics of truth. Truth will always end up eventually being known. And, you know, those three phases of truth. First is ridicule. Second is violent opposition. Third is having been accepted as always having been fact. And I think we are probably somewhere between the second and third phase of that truth that people know, people will recognize this from. That violent opposition to, well, we've always known Mercury's.
Yeah, Mercury's like, of bad, course. Yeah. What are you talking about? We always knew that. You know, I talk to folks about that sometimes, because how many times in your life have you been violently opposed on something in one moment, and then almost in the next moment, the person who was violently opposed to you has taken your idea and as if it was their own idea. And I don't mean maliciously, but they're like, wait, it's always been this way, right? As if it was their idea. And you're like, but wait a second, just a moment ago, and like spirit then says, just be quiet, Robert. It's okay. Let it go. Move on. This is how it works. You know, and
in my
a lot
life
of that
it's
going
happened
on.
Probably, yeah, you said how many times in your life has that happened?
Yes.
In my life it's happened quite a few times, though. But
you know what I'm saying? You almost want to beat them. It's like, dude, I've been telling you this for years, and now suddenly it's like, oh, yeah, but I knew that, and I didn't learn it from you. It's like, okay, at a certain point you go, whatever, let's move on.
Yeah, I agree with you. So my thought process has been the reason that I have felt that maybe the same kind of sentiment that you said is basically because it's probably because of ego, but because they're now saying the same thing that I was saying, it doesn't really matter because somebody is going to benefit from it. Some child is going to benefit from it. Some
yes.
patient is going to benefit from it. So it's all good to go. I've had people trying to explain to me the non-excretor phenomena and the definition.
Mm-hmm.
I had a doctor about 6 years ago trying to explain to me about this non-excretor phenomena. And I said, so where did you hear this? He said, well, one of the doctors at a conference was talking about it and, you know, did a really good job. And he was describing it. It was presented in Congress in the early 2000s. And it was a doctor whose child had problem with mercury and vaccines, and he'd explained it. And so I'm sitting there listening to him, you know, and of course he's talking about me, but he's talking about, he heard another doctor that.
Yeah.
So I listened to him, and then I, you know, told him to go to his website, and I saw him like later on the next day at this conference, and he goes, you're the doctor that presented that at the conference. And I was like, well, I'm glad you discovered that, but you know, I appreciate your explanation of non-excretor phenomena. And for me personally,
yes.
It's rewarding to hear people trying to explain something to me that I talked about 15 years ago. It's you know, it's a validation in a sort of way, but
yeah.
It's also how many more people have suffered over the last 13, 14, 15 years, and how many more are going to continue suffering while other people are still in that area mm-hmm. of the unknown and haven't yet evolved to the point of understanding fact from fiction. So, and when people say, by the way, that it's controversial, there's no controversy. Truth is truth, and lies are lies. And there's no controversy about it. Now, you can be controversial. You can say something's controversial
mm-hmm.
for the sake of saying it's controversial. But for whatever reason, people seem to think that you can take a fact, a true fact, a real known fact, and just say it's controversial and it makes it controversial. There's no controversy. Mercury, it's toxic. Anybody, none of the people that oppose our points of view say that mercury is not toxic. I mean, you know, that's the absurdity of it. You know, the CDC, the Institute of Medicine, the FDA, nobody disagrees that mercury is not toxic. That's not the issue. They just say, oh, it's not causing autism. Hey, it's a poison. We recognize that. It's okay to put it in amalgams. It's okay to put it in vaccines. you know, it's okay. Yes, it is a poison. We know it's a poison. We recognize the poison. Yes, we recognize it's the second most toxic substance on man. But it doesn't cause autism, and it's okay to put it in the human body. What?
Cognitive mercury dissonance.
There's like one neuron short of a synapse here.
Well, you know, speaking of synapse, and this is like, you know, you got on me for a horrible transition or what do they call a segue like last week or 2 weeks ago? You nailed me. You busted me big time. I would like to bust you. I can't. You just made a beautiful synaptical leap that was perfect for the next story I wanted to cover with you. And it goes to a drug called Neurontin and Lyrica. Mm-hmm. And the science is out on this. This is a, you know, these are so-called blockbuster drugs. They're heavily prescribed for off-label purposes, right? Not what they were originally designed for. But it turns out they are causing what they call a death sentence for new brain synapses. So they're preventing brain regeneration, brain growth, or synaptic leaps, if you will, and making healing pathways or neural pathways happen again.
Yes. Yeah, so those drugs, there's some other drugs too. Same category, but yeah, I have not looked at that study. So that was one of the stories that Super Don sent in
there. Here, let me just read what they're saying here real quick. It says a shocking study shows that these two drugs block the formation of new brain synapses, drastically reducing the potential for rejuvenating brain plasticity, meaning that these drugs will cause brain decline that apparently robs one of the ability to rebuild, right? This is the, you know, whole thing about neural regeneration. We were told early on in you know, when I was learning physiology, anatomy, biology, all of that stuff, they're like, well, adult mammals don't, you know, once you lose your brain cells, you're done, right? They never grow back. It's like, it always struck me as weird to say that. It's like, why would we have a system built to just automatically decay with no ability to repair? It made no sense to me. And of course, now for them acknowledging that this happens means that they now acknowledge that, yeah, there is brain repair that can normally occur.
Yep. I totally agree with you. And I think that when you start to deal with drugs that are affecting synaptical issues and neurotransmitter issues and blocking certain neurotransmitter receptor channels, you know, you're starting to create again we're doing something that we're messing with the innate intelligence of the body. The ultimate engineer created various types of safety mechanisms like the negative inhibitory feedback loops and certain checks and balances within the body that are so precise and so perfect, and they're regulating things that we haven't even discovered yet in medicine, you know, what those pathways may be or some of those components may be. So there may be neurotransmitters we haven't even identified or certain other hormones that we haven't identified, because I mean we've identified the vast majority, but if you look at cholesterol and how it converts to, say, progesterone, and then how that further goes to testosterone or estrogen. You know, some of these pathways, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different intermediate chemicals as they convert. So we don't know all the nuances. We may think we know all the nuances, but as soon as we start messing with these types of things, just like the negative inhibitory feedback loop, as soon as you start inhibiting a certain hormone or you start inhibiting a certain neurotransmitter, or you deal with upregulating a synapse or downregulating a synapse, whatever the case is, you start creating an implication for disorder downstream that could be potentially, you know, it could be potentially devastating to the system.
Right.
And we have seen that with certain types of drugs that have been developed. So again, I like to go always back to the ABCs, the basics, you know, and trauma, it's airway, breathing, circulation. So in this type of medicine, to me, when we're talking about palliative medicine, we talk about the conventional standard of care medicine. I always say we need to go back. We need to forget about all these innovative drugs. We need to go back to the basics, and the basics are detoxification, nutrition, and physiological optimization. And if we can do that, the vast majority of drugs that we're utilizing we'll never need.
Yeah, just a pause to tell our new listeners, because we got them all the time. Dr. Bitar has a website, Dr. Bitar, drbuttar.com, but also advancedmedicine.com will open up you a whole new world of healing possibilities. He's trained doctors around the world to do advanced medicine, and we now have access to, you know, whole other access points to even more information that we can't tell you on the air. I'll tell you a little bit about that, but also his international best-selling book, if you haven't read it yet, is called The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. And I'd love for you all, especially if you're new and you don't know about it, that'll give you a lot of the basis for the things that we talk about each and every week here when we do advanced medicine together. On this Neurontin thing, they call it gabapentin, Lyrica, pregabalin. I don't know how to pronounce that one. But there's groups online that say it should be illegal. initially, I think they were approved for seizures, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Then they kind of went off label with a name like Neurontin. They started saying, hey, maybe we could sell this for nerve pain. And I'll be honest, folks, you know what my wife went through for 6 years. It's not like we didn't try anything and everything, including allopathic options. She went on the heavy medications at times just to stay alive until we found the CBD that replaced pretty much everything. And now we got her past that. But even this Neurontin stuff she tried, and you know the indication is to basically kill the nerves. I mean, that's what we're finding, destroy the nerve synapses so that you can't feel. This is not good for longevity.
Yeah, that's a very, very important point. And the whole concept of any drug being utilized in the body, because of we don't have a deficit of a drug in our body. Because if we needed something in our body, God already put it there. So if we start with that premise, then we recognize that anything that we're putting into the body more or less off, it's not going to be conducive to our physiology. So the fundamental difference between a drug and mm-hmm. a nutritional supplement like an herb or a vitamin or a mineral, whatever the case is, the fundamental difference, this was a critical point that somebody asked me at a conference some time ago, you know, can you define the difference? Because a lot of doctors will end up using an herb or a vitamin or a mineral like a drug to cover up the symptom or to deal with the symptom. And that actually is not the appropriate way to use any type of therapeutic, whether it's a vitamin, mineral, and a natural mm-hmm. substance or a drug. But what is the critical difference between a pharmaceutical and a nutraceutical? And the fundamental difference is that a pharmaceutical is designed to inhibit, to block, to prevent something from happening, whereas a nutraceutical is designed to enhance, optimize, you know, progress a certain response. So that's the critical difference. And just remember that to stop something from happening is not good. You don't want to stop things from happening. You want to promote them to happen.
How do you stop it from happening? You just, you know, you stomp on it. You kill it, basically. And folks, we're not into suppression medicine. We recognize temporarily the benefit of getting through a crisis with allopathic medicine. We've never spoken against that. But to utilize these drugs the way, like even for fibromyalgia off-label, I mean, this is not a deficiency of Lyrica, I promise you. Hey, how are we going to save their kidneys, Dr. Bitar? We got to tell them what not to do after this break.
Who'd you say that masked man was?
It's a bird!
It's a plane!
Robert Scott Bell.
Here I come to save the day!
Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
Each and every week we go advanced medicine all over you. That doesn't sound so right. No, we help you to do advanced medicine. Doctors too out there. Dr. Rasha Bitar is with me. I'm getting a little silly because it's past my bedtime. Daylight savings time is over and Super Don thinks I'm a wimp. Whatever, Super Don. I'm just telling you this is how I feel and I'm honest about my feelings.
Oh, just make me look like the bad guy now. Thanks a lot.
See, I know how to play it.
Dr. Bitar, be honest about your feelings.
Referee, Dr. Bitar, save us.
I haven't started the countdown yet, so I haven't seen anybody knocked down. So keep on going.
He likes this too much. Listen, the countdown on your kidneys, that's the big thing here. We got a big problem with these PPI drugs, these so-called heartburn drugs, acid reflux drugs, proton pump inhibitors. You know, it's an I told you so. You and I, we've been talking about these things for many years, shutting down stomach acid production. It's like, well, we have a little stomach acid production left. Let's just shut it all down, right? Block digestion, create malabsorption, cancer, other things. Well, now they're acknowledging serious kidney troubles to these Nexiums and Prevacids.
Well, let me tell you something. It's really, really interesting that you brought this up. I'm actually very interested in assessing the gut bacteria and the role in cancer treatment working, but you bring mm-hmm. up this kidney issue. So I haven't read the study. Everything you just said was correct, but I got to tell you something that happened this weekend
mm-hmm.
While I was on the way to a conference in Atlanta. Dr. Harver, our friend, I had one of his conferences there. And so
he never invites me anywhere. What's wrong with you?
I'll talk to him about that. He actually had me. I was supposed to be at the ACIM conference, so I told him I was going to be there. But then I think it was ACIM conference, so I'm on my way with my son to this conference, and there's a new electrical treatment that we've been doing in our clinic, which is just absolutely phenomenal, and it's part of our protocol that we're using with our cancer patients. And I had just gone through a session. I'm driving to Atlanta, and I start getting this colicky left flank pain, and it gets worse, and it gets worse, and it gets worse. And I'm driving for 3 hours. I'm starting to get nauseated and massive, massive pain. And, you know, I can deal with pain. I've always said pain is a relative thing. It's a mental issue. You can, you know, drive through it. And I've had two kidney stones in the past. They were pretty mild, you know, just breathe and mental thing and pass them. Mm-hmm. But this thing was just unbelievable and excruciating pain. Now, Robert, you know some of the things that I'm going through, and from an emotional, psychological standpoint, from a cleansing, evolutionary standpoint, from a detoxification standpoint, to this spiritual healer that I've been talking with, that this is that there's an emotional release with the kidneys and with the ureters and such.
Yes.
And I had such bad pain that I started to lose consciousness, and my son told me that I kept him saying, "Keep me awake, keep me awake," and I coasted off the road. I don't remember coming to a full stop. He says that the last thing he had told him was lock the doors, and I passed out. I don't remember any of that. And I woke up 45 minutes later, and I was sweating, and there was no more. It felt like a train had hit me on the side, on my left side. So, of course, I didn't get to the conference, and I missed my lecture. I ended up speaking the next day on their panel, but it was a very interesting phenomenon. So, and I'm looking at the kidney, the ureters. I just wanted to mention to everybody that there always is an emotional component to the pathology, to the pain that you're experiencing. And actually, Louise Hayes, who died a couple of years ago, wrote about this quite extensively. And when you start to see a recurrent injury or a recurrent theme, for example, my shins, I have slammed my shins in the last 2-3 years, just slammed them and just injured them to the point that I don't understand. Well, if you look at shin injuries, it's a subconscious issue with a resistance to moving forward in life. Now, do you think that there's, Robert, you knowing what's been happening in my life?
Yeah.
For the last two years, do you think that there's something there? Because I had no idea, but this is all subconscious. Your body picks up on this stuff.
On a spiritual level, you know it all, and it's trying to communicate through our body, and pain is one of those ways it's supposed to do that. And this is the problem I see with, again, allopathic medicine, taking away your pain without identifying its true cause. Now, of course, it can be physical. You bumped your shin, but what does it mean in the Louise Hay level of consciousness, right? Taking it to that truly holistic level, and you're in the midst of it. I mean, these are great teaching moments, but of course, you suffer through them, and they not only benefit you, but they benefit all of us because you're willing to share them on the air, and I appreciate you so much for doing that. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back with more advanced medicine with Dr. Bitar. We may talk more about the kidney issue. We've got some issues on the mumps vaccine. Turns out that people who are getting mumps, they're getting it from people who have been vaccinated already. Also, what is the gut bacteria relationship to overcoming cancer by whatever treatment you decide to use? That's another story we're about to cover.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. The information is so good, it requires no expiration date. The Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, we were talking about kidneys, PPI drugs. I mentioned about the powerful allopathic suppression medicine. And Dr. Bitar is calling me to the carpet on something for some reason. I have no idea why, but he's usually right. So I'll go ahead, Dr. Bitar, take the stage.
Well, actually, Robert, you know that you and I are like 99% of the time on the same sheet of music. In fact, if anything, I'm probably harsher on allopathic medicine than you are.
Right. But the other 1%, we fight like cats and dogs.
Exactly. You know, we take it down to the mat. Exactly. You know, actually, when you made the comment about the allopathic suppression aspect of medicine, I would like to correct you that my residency was in general surgery. And in surgery, when you have a patient that's sustained blunt trauma or penetrating trauma, you never, ever, ever give them pain medicine to suppress their to create that analgesic response, because the only thing that you have to determine whether or not that patient is going to need to be opened up is the progressiveness of that medicine. But if you give them narcotics or something for pain, and they create and they become obtunded, they're blunted. Their response is blunted. They may think, "Oh, I'm fine. You know, everything's okay." The doctor asks, "Am I okay?" Yeah, I'm fine. I have no problem. But now their abdominal exam is thrown off. They can have a liver laceration. They can have a spleen rupture. They can have You'll never know it. So the most hardcore of all specialties, again, trauma medicine, you never suppress the symptoms by giving them a pain medication. So I wanted to point that out, that in all other medical specialties, everybody takes away pain. But in surgery, in acute trauma, nobody. If a doctor gives somebody a medicine to take away the pain, they are absolutely crucified because, I mean, the mainstay, you know, anybody that knows anything, I mean, the basic premise of emergency medicine, you never give somebody medication to get rid of their pain because now how are you going to, you could kill somebody by that.
Sure. So, this is some of the controversy, Dr. Bitar, like in professional sports, like NFL, for the years that they would put them on drugs and get them right back out in the field. They have a stress fracture. You think it's a good idea to go out there and put more weight on a stress fracture, but of course, if you take their pain away, they're not going to feel it. What is that going to end result be?
Exactly. Exactly. So that's the same type of concept. You cover up the symptom, and now the body's own innate mechanism to prevent you from further injuring and allowing for recovery to occur is now inhibited. You've blocked it. And so now you don't feel the pain, so you go and do more that you think you can, and all you do is you create that injury, making it worse and making it chronic and preventing it from healing and actually increasing the amount of time that you need to heal it. So it's the same exact concept. The body mechanisms are designed to optimize healing and recovery. And if we supersede that, we think we can supersede it by our methodology. We think we're smarter than the ultimate engineer. That's what's the most amazing thing to me, that as doctors, we truly think that we can supersede the ultimate engineer. I mean, how arrogant. We are the most arrogant species.
Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, can I go back to your story about having to pull over? You're passed out for 45 minutes, and then you're sweating and you burned out. Did you wake up and you said the pain was gone?
The pain was totally gone. It was sore, very, very sore, but there was no more pain.
My sense about this is that you went through some kind of karmic burn off at that point, you know, that you were letting go of something that was obviously traumatic, emotionally manifesting itself physically. You may have insights you may not want to share, but I mean, my sense of it is like you had resolved something in that 45 minute span or what preceded it.
You know, Robert, so there's a psychologist that's been working with me recently. And she actually happened to call me on the phone about an hour after this. But she's also very spiritually aligned, and that's exactly what she said. And there were certain things that happened, other things that happened, which I can share with you afterwards.
Sure.
I don't want to blow anybody's mind too much, but I didn't realize some of the things. I'll tell you one thing that's really interesting. Now, you know, we have talked about the ability to take away pain from somebody. And I have been able to do this with many people. I've been, you know, my staff members and sometimes patients. I don't do it with the patients being aware, but with my kids, for example, if I'm on the other side of the world and one of my children is ill, has a stomach ache, you know, my wife would call me. I'd pick up the phone. She'd say, you know, someone's obviously sick or Rahan's got a stomach ache. And I'd talk to them and they said, "Dad, do your thing." And then I would have them start breathing and, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes later, the pain would go away. And I mean, I've always been able to do this. Now, why can I do it, and why can the vast majority of people not do it?
Are you asking like a rhetorical question, or you want me?
No, I'm asking you the question. I think you already know the answer. But why is it that I can do this, and the vast majority of the population can't?
Actually, no. There's too many answers that I want to give, so I'm hesitant to give even one, honestly.
Give me the answer that comes, the visceral response.
You know, it becomes an experiential one. It's sort of like if you know how to do something, you know how to do it because of very many reasons. And I'm just like, I'm not following the train to where I normally like go, "Oh, this is the reason." Well, because you know. But
well, that's exactly it. I can do it because I believe I can do it.
Yeah.
And here's the truth. Every human being can do it. But they don't believe they can do it, so they don't do it.
But what I was going at is the experience that got you to the point where you are today. Nobody sees that. You know it, But they don't see that. They see the miraculous thing that happens, right? Like when I met my homeopathic mentor-to-be, and he was telling me things in minutes of meeting me that looked like he was a magician, I didn't see all the decades that led up to his ability to get to that point. It became like a magic trick. And so your ability to do that is something like people go, what do you mean? You just believe that you can do it, right?
Well, that's it. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But that experience of them, I understand exactly what you're saying, because they don't see all those years behind. I totally get what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. But it comes down to the fact that, and the point that I was trying to make, which your point is very valid, it wasn't actually where I was going with this, but the reason that I brought this up was because the experience of me pulling over on the side, before that happened, I asked my son, my 13-year-old, Rahan, he was saying, Dad, where does it hurt? I was in serious pain. He reaches across, like I had to loosen the seatbelt, reaches across and puts his hand on my flank. Did it twice in a 3.5 hour period, did it twice. And both times my pain dissipated.
Mm.
Now, he's 13 years old. His experience is that whenever he hurts, his dad can take away his pain. So he puts his hand on me and I see him start to do his breathing, the deep breathing in and out. You know, he's feeling bad for his dad because he's hurting, and he took my pain away. I mean, he eased it up. It didn't go away completely. Eased it up. But, you know, he'd take his hand off 5 minutes later and come back on.
Yeah.
But it was that was another really cool experience of having that, because I experienced my son trying to do something which is completely based upon his experience of having seen me do it.
Right.
And I'm going to tell everybody that's listening right now, every human being can do this. I'm not blowing smoke. I'm not trying to be positive here. I'm telling you, every human being has the ability to do it because we're all connected.
Okay? Yes.
It's simple. It's intention. That's all it is. It's intention and the belief that you can do it. And belief to the point that you know, once you've done something like 1,000 times, then you realize,
at a certain point, you go, I'm not going to argue. It works, all right? And of course, what you raise your kids this way, it's still surprising because I've seen things like that with my kids where you're like, dude, they were paying attention. They were watching. They were observing. And then it's like natural to them. It's not awkward or unusual. It's like, well, of course, this is what is done. This is what we do. So that's a beautiful experience. And I'm so glad you shared that. It's really empowering, I believe, for everybody to hear. So if we can transition real quick, because I know we're going to run out of time and we'll talk more after the show. But there's a story here about gut bacteria. And I know we like to talk about the microbiome. But this is an interesting story because it talks about the gut bacteria, they're saying, may make or break your chances of a cancer treatment working. Now, I'm thinking that they're going more allopathic in their realm for success. But as we've said, you know, the power of belief can allow you to survive even allopathic oncology. You know, there's an attitude that plays a role there. But of course, how much does the gut microbiome play in our perception of the world, right? Having a positive view of the world and that being a depressed state. We look at the microbiome now and say, man, it has as much or more to do than what's going on in the brain.
Well, this is another really, really powerful concept. And just reading the title of the study, Robert, made me think I need to start looking at this again, because the use of probiotics and prebiotics is very, very important in all disease processes, as we've talked about many times throughout the shows in the last 8 years together. But if there is a critical, subtle thing that may have been missed, we put people on probiotics. Just that's part of the thing that when before we start the treatments when they have cancer. But I need to go back and I need to look at, is there an optimum balance? Is there something else we can do to upregulate the gut flora? So probiotics, everybody hears about. We know, obviously, antibiotics are not conducive. But recently, I've been talking to some people about prebiotics.
Yes.
And these are the fibers and the fructose oligosaccharides and some of those other things that are necessary for the probiotics to actually flourish, to help them flourish. And I really haven't done much in prebiotics. So that's an area that I'm going to spend a little bit more time to see what we can do to help the gut flora by increasing the prebiotics.
Well, you know, that's why I've been lecturing on this for years. It's been part of my life's mission, because I had to heal my own gut to get to the point where I can be alive, much less communicate this. But so much of, as we see, all of health in our body relies upon the microbiome, which is, you know, you talk about arrogant species we are. You know, if we kill off all the bugs, which we do in allopathic medicine with antibiotics, we do so to our own demise. And we create all of these diseases. So they're saying if you have the right balance, you know, the healthy microbiome, you know, even though they know 60 to 70% of the time, maybe more of their cancer drugs fail, but they say if you have a good microbiome, you could survive it. You're much more likely to survive it.
Yeah, exactly, because if to me, it's the same thing as somebody who exercises on a regular basis, is fit, and God forbid they're in a car accident, they're going to be able to sustain that trauma of that the motor vehicle accident much better than somebody who hasn't exercised, whose body is more frail, and they will sustain more injuries. This is a proven fact. It's happened before. People that are athletic, they can deal with more physical assault to their body during these blunt motor vehicle accident type injuries, and they can recover sooner and faster. They have less internal injuries, et cetera. So it's mm-hmm. the same type of thing. It's a preventative measure. If you can be fit, here's something that, you know, most people don't get fit and most people don't get strong in order to prevent themselves from being injured in a car accident. They do it for other reasons. They do it for health. They do it for vanity. They do it for, you know, so they look better, et cetera, et cetera. But here's a side benefit that the body can sustain more trauma. It's the same type of thing we're talking about here.
Yeah, resilience, flexibility. I think Tom Brady at 40 in the professional football, he talks about that flexibility and strength, and that when he gets hit and falls, he has a way to disperse the energy. So it's not all focused in one point where it would create that tremendous injury. And there's always Arnica, Montana as well. Folks, we got a lot more healing to go. One more segment to do it with Dr. Rasha Bitar. Might we talk about the mumps spreading among those who are vaccinated?
You're listening to the Robert Scott Bell Show. The Robert Scott Bell Show. The information is so good, it requires no expiration date. The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Robert Scott Bell Show.
I'd like to say that nobody does advanced medicine like Dr. Bitar or what we do together. And I think I'm telling the truth there. It doesn't mean there's not advanced medicine happening in places, but a lot of it, Dr. Bitar has planted the seeds as he's gone around and trained doctors around the world. And, you know, we do get those questions. How do we find these doctors? Advancedmedicine.com, will that open a portal where people can access more of this that they need, Dr. Bitar?
Yes, sir. That is exactly correct. And hopefully we'll have those other clinics listed. And my goal is that we will have so many that people will never have to worry about traveling more than a couple hundred miles to get to the closest one. So worldwide.
Nice.
That is my goal.
I mean, it's a beautiful goal, and we'll help you every way we can to do that. By the way, there's an invitation code when you want to sign up for certain aspects within advanced medicine. Because you're a listener to the Robert Scott Bell Show, if you want to enter the code 1358, that'll get you in because it's a membership only, but we're covering the cost for you here on the Robert Scott Bell Show. So remember that number, 1358.
Yeah, that's a big cost saving, too, because it goes from $99 a year to $1 lifetime.
Yep. That's a sweet deal. That is a sweet deal. Now, what's not a sweet deal is imagining, if you will, getting a measles, mumps, rubella shot with the mumps thing, thinking, hey, I'm protected, when in fact you're contagious and you're not protected. Mumps is on the way back, but it's happening in fully vaccinated populations. New York Times now finally covers this. That's the stunning aspect of this story. Mike Adams, Natural News, has been covering it. We've been covering it for years here. The fact that Merck has been, you know, sued in whistleblower lawsuits because they spiked the mumps side of that thing with rabbit blood antibodies, so that they could have exclusive monopoly. They don't have to share their MMR shot because they've proven we're 95% effective, which is completely bogus. And the fact of the matter is, with the measles, they're shedding measles virus. I don't know what they're shedding with the mumps thing, but it's not creating antibodies. So there is no so-called pseudo-protection even happening.
Yeah, this isn't just with mumps. I mean, we had this with the measles. Remember with the measles breakout, it was only the wild type. So we're seeing this in various types of infectious processes, people that are been vaccinated, and it's just another moment of I told you so type, you know, moment of mm-hmm. duh, whatever you want to call it. But it's just amazing that they just don't get it, Robert. But soon mm-hmm. it's not going to make any difference whether they get it or don't get it, because the world's going to get it. And once the world yeah. gets it, you know, then they become obsolete.
Well, and it's like that where we're talking about all the what do you say, the corruption in government, media, everything. The vaccine issue is part of that. More people are going to see through it. I don't know that everybody will, because this planet is a training ground. So it's part of our process of learning. And you know, it, when I'd like to drag people there, you mentioned about this, the shin bumps. I remember learning about this in my teen years with my sister, because I'm the older brother, and I thought, you know, I can protect her from having to go through experiences that I had been through. Little did I know that it was violating a spiritual principle of non-intervention or non-interference, that, you know, it's not that I would let her walk on the train track, get hit by a train, but the point is there are experiences that people need that they can't learn through you necessarily. They must go through them. And in the process of me trying to protect her, I was actually preventing her from learning things that were vitally important for her. And I kept banging my, you know, my somehow I was able to see cause and effect in a reasonably short period of time to recognize every time I try to intervene when it's not appropriate to protect her, I was being hammered. And I'm like, this is not right. I'm trying to help here. But it's like the analogy I've given many times, and Super Don loves it, of taking the little old lady across the street, and she's beating you with her umbrella the whole time, and you get across and go, lady, why aren't you saying thank you? I helped you across the street. She says, because I didn't want to go across the street. And you're like, oh, I thought you wanted to go across the street. I never stopped to ask, never stopped to consider that.
Well, this is an important component, because I think that I have a little bit different opinion on this. I know what you said is correct, and I know that this is exactly what it is. You have the spiritual basis, you can't intervene, and have to allow that person to go through the experience. I totally agree with that. But my belief system is that if we have the ability to help somebody, then it's almost like having knowledge and not sharing it. It's the same type of thing. If you have the ability to help, we need to help. I don't think that necessarily it supersedes or is opposing the viewpoint that you just said.
No,
but I do believe that we...
I think the difference is force, right? I used force to violate their freedom. And it's one thing to share. I don't think that's violating, because it's not forceful. But when I went in and said, I'm going to hold you down to make sure you don't get hurt this way, right? That was different. Again, I'm not talking about not getting hit by a train. So, Dr. Vitar, once again, another great edition of Advanced Medicine, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tell them what they need to know, because it is time to go.
That the power to heal is unequivocally yours.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.